This video is being brought to you by the Textual Approach to Breaking into Cybersecurity ebook. If you're thinking about getting into cybersecurity, discovering your ideal role, having trouble getting interviews, having trouble in your interviews, need LinkedIn help, or all the above, then this is the book for you. You can purchase this book at textualconsulting.com/digital products. The link will be in the description. Hope this don't take too long to come on in, but we'll see. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Textual Talk Season 2, Episode 7, man. We got a wonderful guest for y'all today. He's a LinkedIn icon. He's a compliance icon right now, and he's doing his thing. And I'm going to turn this down, even though I can edit this and master it later. I know it's loud. Let me stop the music real quick. But without further ado, everybody, I want to introduce you, Mr. AJ Young. Let's give him a round of applause, please. But all right. Man, I appreciate you for tapping in with me. This should have been happening a while ago. I have all this software at my disposal, and I was manually doing all this crap, setting up these podcast interviews. But it clicked for me when I was supposed to be doing one with Dewan Lightfoot one day, and he just sent me the Calendly link. And I was like, I got my own Calendly stuff. Why I just don't set it up like that? And that's when the consistency became easier, because when I manually had to do stuff, I would kind of fall off of it. But now that I scheduled, I stick to the schedule, and you know, it is what it is now. But would you appreciate telling the listeners who you are and a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you having me on, and glad we finally got this scheduled. So I'm AJ Yan. I'm the founder and CEO of ByteCheck. I've been doing this cybersecurity thing for a little bit over a decade. Started my career in the U.S. Army, where I was an Army officer for 6 years, did a few deployments, ended up getting out after earning the rank of captain. And then went to work at a cybersecurity compliance consulting company where I helped grow a team. When I joined, there was about 9 of us. When I left there last year, there was well over 130. And we were doing everything from SOC 2 to ISO to HIPAA to HITRUST, the full alphabet soup of compliance we were doing. And I just was able to grow super fast, did a lot of cloud security advisory work, cloud security architecture stuff, some corporate development, M&A stuff, working with a lot of our customers, just really figuring out how they can establish their SaaS applications in the cloud in a secure manner. And while there, I realized that there's a huge opportunity in cybersecurity compliance because companies are paying thousands of dollars for this stuff, and they are doing it in a manual way. And I knew that I could probably bring a software solution to the market and do very well. So last year, decided to launch ByteCheck in the middle of a global pandemic, and been building it since. And things are going, you know, really well. Just finished up a seed round of funding. But that's a little bit about me. You know, I carved out a lot of my background learning about AWS and the cloud, and leveraging, you know, those skills to help grow my career and then put myself in a position to start this company.
Yeah, man, let's give you a round of applause for you guys that don't know. I'm probably going to butcher, but I'm just saying, they raised money with primarily minority funding, an amount around $3 million, right?
Correct. Yeah, we did a $3 million seed round raised from majority Black investors or Black-led funds, which was really dope to me to have the support of the community of people that look like me behind me.
Nice. Let me give you some cheering for that real quick. But yeah, man, that's dope. So I read a little bit of your profile. I seen that you're a baller. You're a play. And but you're from California. So did you get recruited to go to Florida?
Yeah. I got recruited to play out there. And it was a good time, man. Life-changing experience to be a college athlete, especially at a school like Florida State and the ACC, where, you know, I got to play at Duke, play at North Carolina, all these places that you see on TV growing up and historical places. When we went to North Carolina, I remember the shoot around, looking up in the rafters, and you see Jordan, you see Vince Carter, you see all, you like, man, these are historical greats of all time, Hall of Famers that were playing in the same gym. So it was a cool experience. But yeah, I used to be all right at basketball. I don't hoop as much as I like to anymore, but I feel like I still got it.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Like, one of the things I thought about is like, what different type of, you know, awareness could we bring to like our communities about this type of stuff? So I was like, man, it's enough of, you know, I'm seeing enough of brothers are like, shoot, we like playing, you know, football, basketball, whatever. Like, man, we could set up a freaking meetup or something. We hoop. I mean, you know, I ain't gonna do nothing but pass the ball and play defense, 3 and D. That's all I want to do. I don't need no shine or nothing. But that's dope, man. So from playing ball, did you decide to go into the Army?
Yeah, so when I was at Florida State, I got injured. I broke both of my ankles, not at the same time, sheesh, one after the other. And I'm, you know, being from California, schools, out-of-state tuition is really expensive. So I joined the military to help pay for school, since my basketball dreams were shattered. Even though I ended up getting back on the team, earning my scholarship back and all that good stuff, and still getting to live out that experience. It was a windy road, but I'm really glad that happened, because the Army forced me to grow up really fast and taught me a lot about leadership. I think one of the reasons why I've been successful is because I learned how to lead before I learned technology. I learned how to deal with people. And then now later on in my career, I had to learn technology, which really helpful, because at the end of it, even though there's all these technologies and all this stuff we learn, you know, it's all about people at the end of the day. And if you don't know how to work with people, you're not going to be successful in any aspect of tech, let alone cybersecurity. So it was, you know, the Army was kind of forced on me. You know, I went in, my dad was in the Marine Corps for 20 years. So I was raised around that. And I was like, yeah, I don't want no part of that, is my mindset growing up. I thought sports were going to be my way out. I actually got to hoop in the Army a little bit as well. But it, you know, I'm glad that I did. I joined, and I was able to have a really successful career as an officer, and earned the rank of captain and all that, which was awesome and pretty cool for the family. But yeah, it was out of force, man. Like no whole patriotic story, other than I was trying to figure out for school. And I'm glad I served. It was great to serve my country, but it was, you know, part of my story that I tell people all the time is whenever there's an obstacle, I turned it into a path. I turned it into the way that I could turn that into success. And the Army just kind of sprung upon me, and I turned that into a successful outcome.
Nice. And you look fairly young. So about how long ago was this?
Yeah, so I'm 33. I graduated college in 2010. I didn't leave until 2011. I was able to play another year and be a super senior, which was the best part of my time in Tallahassee. I was just hooping and hanging out on campus. I wasn't really doing much else. But yeah, I'm about 33.
Got you. Was there on that T-Pain out there?
Yeah.
Well, actually, he had kind of started falling off. He was on when you went in there.
Yeah, he's from Tallahassee. He was big during that 2006 to 2010 time frame.
Trust me,
he was real big.
I remember. See, because actually you're only like a couple of years older than me, like what, 4 years older than me. You left college as I came in like the fall of 2010, and I'm trying to see who was hot around that time. I mean, of course, Drake, and then Wayne still had it at the time. T-Pain kind of was falling. It was like the surge of like all the party type of songs by the time I came into school. But I was going to ask you about, so once you got to the military or the Army, you know, to be more specific, is that where you got interested into, I mean, got not interested, but introduced to cybersecurity?
Yeah, like really fast. So I was a signal officer, communications officer, and I had to learn all things there were tech in the basic officer leadership course that I went to as a second lieutenant. Then when I got to my unit, I was in an artillery unit where, you know, we had a bunch of missiles that we were shooting. And a part of my job was figuring out how our missiles can communicate with each other, can communicate with the soldiers that were pushing the buttons to fire them and their location and all of that stuff. So I had to deal with that. But then on the flip side of that, I had to set up whole networks, both on the unclassified and on the classified side, and figure that out and go really from, you know, an empty field. And then you set up a tent, you get some cables out there, you get some Cisco routers, and you figure some stuff out, and you get things connected. And that's what I was doing. So I had a boss that told me, if it plugged in, it was my responsibility. So I was responsible for everything from the coffee pot to Outlook to secret networks to networking to the cybersecurity that behind it of encrypting our data and things like that, which was is a crazy experience because, you know, there's no other real company or industry where you can get that type of exposure and experience in such a short period of time, which taught me a lot. And I was able to get exposed to a lot. But that's where I first got interested in cybersecurity. And then when I was starting to realize I was going to get out of the military, I started to learn more about what does actual tech and cybersecurity mean outside. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm really interested in this stuff because I saw some of the salaries, I saw some of the opportunities, and I'm like, yeah, this is something that I could do full time for sure.
Nice, man. Let me get some gunshots there real quick. Man, but you really reminded me of me when you said you start seeing the salaries and kind of like on your way out, you start really kind of looking into it a little more. That's kind of like how it was for me coming out of college. And ironically, as I'm talking to you right now, recently I was emailing I got my undergrad from LA Tech. So I was talking to the head of my old platform, not platform, but program I was in, computer information systems. And I was going over the curriculum and I was like, this curriculum looks a little stale. Like it's kind of similar to what I had, which was not helpful at all. But I guess they've changed a little bit of the programming languages they teach. But all in all, I was like, I sent them a message like, hey, this, you know, this not going to cut it. In lack of better words. I mean, I had a client, they graduated, I think in 2019 or something like that. And her curriculum was the exact same that I had. And I was like, this is horrible. This is why you're not going to find anything and why people, I don't know what their enrollment numbers are, but why they won't go. And I'm like, the reason why courses and boot camps are leading the charge is because schools refuse to transition into the stuff that matters for them getting out of school. That's why I believe pretty much your time, if I presume that you pretty much use your Army experience kind of like a big internship, you know? I mean, you're already getting paid, but plus like touching on so many different things. To me, that's like a glorified internship to where now you can put on your resume all those projects you just worked on and you go hand it to somebody and say, hey, this is what I did here and I can explain to you this and this. And then, you know, they may say, okay, well, we use this specific thing or whatever. Yeah. But if you could do what you did, you can learn any of that because 9 times out of 10, you're going to get trained.
Exactly. Yeah. And I tell people all the time that are in the military trying to get out that one of the things that I did that was really helpful for me to land a job when I got out was I got a bunch of certs my last year in the Army because a lot of what we do in the military doesn't directly translate to the civilian world. It's very hard right. to describe like, yeah, I was doing this and it says like you can do that job in that field. But you know what does translate? Certifications. And that helps somebody say like, oh, this person knows this. At least, you know, I can see that because they have this. So my last year in the service, I got 11 certs in a 12-month period. I was collecting every cert on demand. and it was because I knew I had to figure out a way to communicate to recruiters and other people like this is the stuff I know that I've done for the last 5 years. So, you know, if anybody is listening to this that's in the military thinking about getting out or has been in the military and trying to get into this field, you got to put in some of the groundwork to translate your skills to the civilian world so that recruiters and companies know like, okay, so yeah, you were in the Army doing cyber stuff, but what does that mean? Okay, it means you got SEC plus, you got CISA plus, he has these cloud certs, whatever it may be, whatever path you're trying to go down, you got to kind of do some of that work to convince them. And that's what I did. The military was great from an experience perspective and it was getting me in the right rooms, but the certs are what really put me over the top because it helped me speak the language of the civilian organizations.
Nice. But at least, like I say, I'll just lean back on that. You actually had experience, but you coupled that with certs.
Yeah,
you absolutely. Got people right now, you know, they buggy pushes at Target, you know, shout out to Target. I used to work there through college, but now somebody done told them on Twitter, hey, you go get these 3 certs and you finna make some money, but it doesn't really work like that. So I'm glad that you expounded on how you use that to leverage everything.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you got to talk about what you learned in them certs. So if you can collect them all you want, but at some point someone's going to ask you a question. And if you haven't actually done the thing, or, and it doesn't mean, and I tell people all the time, like, that doesn't mean that you have to have worked in this field for 30 years to get a job, but like, don't show up with an AWS cert and have never actually touched anything on AWS. Like, you got to actually go do this stuff, do some labs, prove that you know what you're talking about. Because there's times I've interviewed people with crazy resumes and I ask them a very simple question and I can't get an answer. And it's because they've just collected certs or other stuff. And it's like, it's very, it's easy. That's the thing that's crazy about this industry. I'm sure you see it, but like, it's very easy to collect a cert, but it's also easy to find out what someone doesn't know. It's so quick and easy that I can do it in a really quick conversation without it taking much effort. So it's like, to me, it's pointless for those people out there that are just cert chasing without the knowledge, because you're going to get called out on it very quickly.
Definitely. I tell them all the time, hey, do the cert to learn and not to pass. No, not to talk about a client, but I had to tell them that because they were saying, well, they were struggling kind of remembering what they're doing. And I was like, well, slow down and really try to focus on this, because you can't get this thing and then try to slap it on your resume and then they ask you something you don't know. Like, you go, like you say, you go get an AWS cert and they say, oh, you know, what is a VPC? You're like, I don't know. You know, what letter question is that, A, B, C, or D on the test? You know, exactly. That's kind of what it is. Because if you, a lot of these people, like I brought up earlier, will promise them you get all these certs. So they'll study a week or two and pass it. Oh, and go on LinkedIn. Oh, I just got this. But then you still see open to work on their profile, or they're on Twitter and they talking about, I can't get no callbacks. And then you go look at their resume. No projects done whatsoever with the new technology they're trying to get into. So I was like, how are we supposed to know that you know how to do what you say just because you got a cert? I mean, you got the rise of the people who just inbox you on LinkedIn and say, hey, so-and-so, would you be interested in some training? We can get you AWS. And somebody just sent me that earlier and I ain't responded to them yet. I typically make them, you know, stop messaging me. But that's look, ladies and gentlemen, you know, if you're just tuning in, welcome to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD. We got AJ Young with us today. And we're talking about how you shouldn't cert chase. And it's not, you know, not knocking you. And I think the biggest thing is, you know, a lack of guidance. But I will say, at least this generation, and maybe you can attest to this, even though, granted, you was in the Army. But when I was coming out of school, I didn't have, you know, this abundance of resources like we have on Twitter now and LinkedIn and YouTube and all these courses. I didn't have that to say, oh, so this is how I go to get a SOC job. I can, boom, I can go look at Dave Cyberwalk's channel. He's going to kind of give me a blueprint, or I can go look at my channel and get the blueprint. I was just like, somebody told me I had a SEC plus already. And I think it's one of those military things. He wasn't in cybersecurity, but because he was working in the Air Force, he was like, yeah, go get the CEH. And then, you know, but that more so works if you're in like that government environment where they need you to get those certs. Cause I think those certs are like a certain level. I don't memorize the stuff like everybody else knows it. Whatever standard it stands for.
Yeah, 85, 70. Yeah.
Right. And so he was telling me that, but that really wasn't good advice because, truth be told, the only thing I really learned by studying for CEH is the different NMAP scans. I didn't really learn much on top of, I wasn't really getting interviews either while studying for it. On top of, I didn't pass it when I took it because they changed the test that I studied for an older version. So it was just a lot going on right there. And that's why, you know, if you listen to this now, take advice from seasoned vets in the field or more than one person. That way you see if there's any overlap and see if it makes sense. If you want to get advice from these gurus, go on there and see if they got a LinkedIn, see if they work where they said they worked, see if they got any recommendations for people that work with them. That should tell you that should be a little bit solidified because, you know, it's just a lot going on. A lot of people took this quarantine and the great, you know, resignation as a money grab, and a lot of hardworking people are getting done so wrong in this industry with wrong information. People are charging way too much for their services, and now you got people with vendettas against, you know, the honest people who want to help people get in, and they're starting up spaces and so, well, they're not talking about me because nobody ever mentions my name because they don't, you know, they're too scared to do that, but that's just what they do out here, man. I'm just kind of sick of it. But I'm glad you touched on that. So what I'm going to move into is from when you got out of military till your first job, about how long did that transition take?
I mean, I didn't really have a gap, honestly. So I started applying, I think in the summer of 2016 and ended up getting my first offer in October of that year. And I decided to sign on, and I joined that company in January of 2017. And I technically was still in the Army on terminal leave until March 1st. So I really didn't miss a beat. But one of the best piece of advice my dad ever gave me was when I decided to get out, he was like, you need at least 18 months before you get out. And I was like, man, you're crazy. Like, I got a degree, I got a master's program, I'm a captain in the Army, I'm gonna get a job easily. He's like, all right, bet, go apply for some jobs. And I tried to apply for some jobs and I got nothing, not even a deny email. And I was like, all right, maybe I need, and that's when I decided to get a bunch of search and things like that, because I realized my resume alone with the 2 degrees, with the experience, with the rank I had didn't matter without me being able to speak the language. So I focused for a year straight, really all of 2016. I locked in, deleted all my social media, just locked in on transforming kind of what I look like to the outside from a resume perspective, and was able to land that job. And I mean, the crazy thing about this industry that I've seen over the years is, like, it's really hard to break in, but once you're in, you know, you get to, you can do your thing, and you can do it well, and you can grow really fast. And I've been, I was fortunate to do that there and break in and then be able just to expand there. But I've been able to help people as well by bringing them on to Bite Check as interns, and they transition to full time and then go off and get jobs making a ton of money. And it's funny how hard it is for people that are trying to get in, but how easy it kind of gets once you're there.
Right.
And nice. How simple it is to move around. So, like, that's anybody that's trying to break in that's listening to this, like, just keep going. Like, it's tough unnecessarily at times for you to break in. But once you get through, like, it is, it's so great on the other side, and it's worth it. You just got to kind of keep going.
Nice. Yeah, I definitely was going to touch on that a little bit, because I understand both hands on why it's hard to break in and then why it shouldn't be. Because on one hand, depending on the job that person's going to do, you're going to be in charge of some stuff. And I think some people, all they look at is the money they can make doing this. But a lot of times they don't think about, and that's why I made one of my videos, like, you know, what happens when a real security incident happens, because you don't see the other side of it. You know, these people who are wanting to get in, they not, you know, they didn't realize, hey, everybody, well, granted, I just started working at a new company, so I technically wasn't doing a lot of work, but they not realizing that everybody hadn't got any sleep for the last couple of days because the Log4j. I've been seeing the teams been blowing up 24/7. Hey, we working on this, we're working on this. They're not seeing that part of seeing why, hey, this is why it's important, this is why we get paid this much, because it's, you know, volatile industry at any given time. You know, they could say, well, hey, sorry, you guys feel we're getting another supplier. Y'all got to go find your own jobs, you know, and it happens. And that's the part that a lot of people don't convey over. It's one of the things I try to do to let people know why you should. If you do get your first job, take it very seriously and do, you know, the best you can and get, you know, people to vouch for you, especially even if it's an internship. If you go there, and I'm going to say this key word, I know you hear it all the time, but networking. You get to that internship and you start networking, you may not, you know, that company may or may not offer you full time, but if you make a good impression enough, somebody's going to remember you, say, I work with that, you know, that young guy, that young woman, hire them. Yeah. And so that's really one of the goals of really trying to go to the next step is your soft skill point. Like, cause you've seen it, like you said, people probably had like more skills than anything, but they probably didn't fit the vibe of Bite Check. And you're like, you know, they're cool, but I don't know, they're not going to mesh well with everybody. And I think that's an underrated skill, because I was just talking to a client and they offered a job. They didn't even know they was having an interview. She was just talking to the hiring manager. And she said at the end of the call, they was like, well, you know, you don't have to worry about another interview, because, you know, I'm the hiring manager and I'm going to hire you.
Yeah.
And just from her personality alone.
Yeah.
And I think that's so big, because if you got the aptitude to learn, you could technically learn your day-to-day stuff. You know, if you could learn typically how to pass a cert, you could potentially learn your day to day, but you have to really want to learn it. And you have to be willing to put in time off the clock to get better, so people not having to hold your hand as much. If you could do those two things, they'll let the leash off of you fast, and you can pretty much Like you said, name your price once you get that. I tell people about a year or two with this market. All you need is probably about a year, and you know, you can kind of run it up, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the crazy part as well about the industry is that a lot of the success is not about your technical skills. It's about how do people like you? Like, do people want to work with you? Because anybody that's been in cybersecurity understands that this stuff is really hard. It's hard to learn. So even if you come in and you're an expert on all things AWS, tomorrow AWS is going to release new services. So you're going to have to go learn it again. So all we care about, at least for me as an employer, and people can hear this directly from somebody who's hiring a bunch of people right now, I care about how you think and like how you solve problems, less about what you currently know. Like oftentimes when I get a resume or I'm looking at a LinkedIn, I'm looking at your activity. Like, what are you doing? Like, what do you care about? Have you published anything? Do you have any projects out there? I'll go see the certs eventually and see what certs you have. That will help. But it's about, you know, it's about what do you actually know and how do you think about it? Like, over the last year, what have you learned new and what have you shared with people? Because that's what's important to me, because I know tomorrow I'm going to ask you to do something you've never done before. And I need to know that you're willing and able to learn that. And a lot of it is soft skills. I've had those conversations where even my first job out of the Army, the hiring manager told me the only reason he hired me, he's like, yeah, you got the CISSP and all these other certs and all this other stuff. I'm like, you're really technical compared to everybody else we're hiring, but I hired you because you're a former student athlete and I'm a former student athlete. So, you know, I think student athletes have something special. So a lot of times it's not even the technical stuff. The technical stuff gets you through the door and then you have to actually be able to do that stuff. But a lot of times to get the jobs you want, it's about who you are as a person. And I think a lot of people in tech forget that. They forget that it's about the individual and about who you are. And they care so much about credentials. We lose sight of what's important, but hiring managers don't. Like, to your client's example, if they vibe with you and they think that you're a good fit for the team and they can teach you something, they'll bring you on. So it's more about those soft skills and just understanding that it's about who you are as a person versus everything else.
Definitely. I know, like, the last couple of interviews I did for my last company, that's pretty much how I was. Like, I look at the resume, oh, cool, kind of feel how they are and how they think. That's the most important thing, especially when you an analyst job. Like, how do you approach things? I mean, I'm not going to ask you all this stuff that some of these other guys, I don't care about drilling you. That don't tell me much, because you can go. It's all these sites online now where it says, here go to, you know, security analyst questions or what they might ask you in interview. You can go memorize all them.
Yep.
So I just typically ask you something that has to deal with what you do in a typical day to day with us. And a lot of people answer good and some people are kind of lost, you know, and that's kind of where it goes with that. But so you've already bought a bite check, but, and I read a little bit of why you started it. So let's see, you started in 2016, and actually, let me reverse back. You said something important that I want to gloss over when you said published, and then you said like projects of things you're working on.
Yeah.
Which was big, because I remember I think it's like the middle part of 2020 when I decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to just go all in with my content and really just start branding myself. And really started reaping those rewards of building my networks organically and everything. That's how I came across you last year. And I remember, you know, I forgot what it was, but I remember you tuning in to the video I dropped when that Big Sean dropped. And I thought about that. But yeah. It's so funny how something simple as just making up your own blog and talking about what you learned or what you did or these different attacks, how that can set you apart from other people that are applying. And I know, like, most of my clients hear me, like, it's a little tedious and, you know, remedial. I don't know why Siri's talking. That's why I did that. But anyways, I sound like a broken record when I'm repeating that to them. Man, hang on. I hate this map. I don't even know what I did for it to start talking. Mm-hmm. But it's simple yet effective. I had another client, I think, which is crazy to me, and these are the type of clients. If you're listening, this is the type of clients I like to work with. We had a coaching call. I said, hey, I looked at their resume and the stuff they had on it. I said, you know what? You're very detailed. You should start writing. 30 minutes later, she tags me on Twitter with her first blog article. I knew from that point then they were going to be successful. So within a month and a half, that was one of the people, if anybody's been on my LinkedIn or my Twitter, that I was tweeting about, who got the entry-level security engineer role. And she actually wasn't even applying for that. They put it, said, hey, we want you to apply for two of these. And the hiring managers were trying to decide who was going to get her on her team. But it's like, when you put forth the effort, good things are going to come. I'm not going to say they're going to come that fast, but they will come. So if you are listening and you just listen to us, put in the work, stay down. Don't try to, you know, go to principal level when you're really entry. and you'll be at that level very soon. And you can scale up. The thing is, it don't really, and this other thing, if they like you good enough and cybersecurity, sometimes they want to care about your user experience. But like, for example, my friend Dayspring, he's only really been doing this for a year, but the way he works on things is insane. I was like, dude, you're already at senior level. And I was like, you could, you know, do that fairly fast. Just like my other friend, Taeyong Tech, was working with me, and then he left, and then he got a either senior or whatever, close to principal level role consulting, you know, and he just was on a SOC. I was like, he was used to work hard like that. So you can get the job, just get in the door, and then work even harder, and you could do whatever you want to do. But the two things I was going to get on is what I want to say before you launched BiteCheck, how long did you have the concept and kind of like planned it to launch it? Yeah. How long did that process take for you?
Yeah. I mean, I started thinking about being an entrepreneur and starting my own business back in 2018, really is when I first kind of started the idea of doing this. But I didn't really know what I was going to do. Didn't really understand what the business was going to be, what the business model, what I was going to do. And it took me, I knew at that stage that even though I wanted to be an entrepreneur, I had a lot to learn, and I needed to learn more about the business. I needed to learn more about the ins and outs of what goes on in this industry. How does the company make money? All of that stuff. So I just kept getting promoted, kept learning more about business. And last year in November, 2019. So a couple of years ago now, I realized that I had maximized everything that I was doing at my old company. And there wasn't really much else for me to do there other than leave and go get another job or start my own company. And I realized that I wasn't going to be happy going to work for someone else, that I had enough experience in this field. I was making a ridiculous amount of money, more money than I could ever dream of. And I had a bunch of money saved up to where I was in a position to do it. And I was always making excuses of why I couldn't start a company, like, oh, I got two kids, it's going to be too difficult, blah, blah, blah. But when I peeled it back and kind of realized my financial situation, I was like, oh, you actually can do this. And you're just making excuses. And one of the things I try to do is have regret minimization. And then I don't want to look back when I'm 60, 70 years old and say, I wish I would have done this, or I wish I would have done that. I'm going to try as many things as possible while I'm here. And this was one of those things where I knew for me, I wasn't fulfilled, you know, despite the amount of money I was making, despite the success that I have, all the traveling and things I was able to buy, I didn't have that same level of fulfillment and selfless service that I felt when I was in the military. And I knew for me to live out my impact and do what I wanted to do in this world, and to make real money, you know, I think before I was making, back in 2018 or 2019, I don't remember when, but I was making like $150,000 a year. That was like my highest point. And then I was making $200,000 a year. That was my highest point. Then $250,000, that was my highest point. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. You know, I'm making all this money, but I realized pretty quickly that that's not a lot of money. It feels good. It feels good to say and see it, but like, life changing.
The more you make, the more they take.
Exactly. That's facts. Also, I knew I wasn't changing nobody's life. Like, you know, my immediate circle, my life was changed. I was able to buy whatever I want. My kids were good, but I wasn't impacting my mom, my brothers and sisters, my family at scale like I wanted to do. And I've always been inspired to do. So I knew I had to do something that was bigger than myself and step out. And I, I realized I had no more excuses not to do this, man. And decided to take the leap. But, the one thing I'll tell people is like that they should remember from what I said is in 2018, I had the idea that I'd be an entrepreneur, but I waited, until March of 2020 to actually start this thing because I knew I had a lot more to learn. I knew I had a lot more skills to accumulate, a lot of sales skills, things that I just didn't do before. I had to learn that have helped me tremendously as a founder now. So sometimes it takes patience. You know, there's a lot of fantasizing about entrepreneurship and being a startup founder. And it's really difficult and you shouldn't do it unless you have the financial situation to do it to where you're not worried about your personal finances, but also that you have the domain expertise. Like you got to know what you're doing. Don't start a company to say you started a company. That is not smart. You should start a company because you know the industry, you know the problem you're solving, you know exactly how you're going to grow it. And then it makes the hard parts a little bit easier, but they're still hard. But I could not imagine doing this job as a startup founder in an industry that I didn't have the years of experience that I had. And I've seen the ins and outs of this industry, seen a bunch of problems. And that's helped me out a lot.
Yeah, man. Hey, no lie. I'm low key using this like as a coaching call because I had always, there's a couple of you guys that I've seen on LinkedIn and Twitter that I was like, man, I'm going to reach out to them one day. Because granted, I have a company now, but this is just one facet. I do like this because I am able to impact people's lives and help them now. Like, you know, I don't even know the number, but I've helped way more people than I did last year get their first jobs or whether it's my content or direct coaching. So that's cool. But that's only one facet. I was like, the next level is, which I've been kind of doing, is like I've been going different levels through positions. Okay. Put all this together. So boom, I could have, you know, either my own consulting gig where I hire people that pay them well, and we go in and provide the services that I see these other companies do when I'm working for a company. And just that's another way. Like, oh man, nobody won't give me a chance. But I know I'm not going to put any HR barriers on you because if I like you, I like you. And so that's the next thing to do. And I'm not going to lie, I think it scared me a little bit because as far as like, how do I compete against these other companies? Like, you know, besides I know what I can do. But far as selling what I can do for your company. And I think at the end of the day, I know a little bit has to do with like how, you know, you could do something better for the other company and help them save money from paying these other people as well.
Yeah, some of it is that. But oftentimes what you'll find, especially when you're dealing with these larger companies, they don't really care about price. They care about quality. The trick of any company, you never want to have your main differentiator be price. You never want to sell on price. You want it to be your value that you're bringing. And yeah, you might save them time and money, but you're saving them time and money because of the overall aspect of your service is so great that they don't have to invest, yes, less money up front, but also now all their internal resources are being saved. But, you know, I think for you, you know, just continue to, that's what I tell anybody, like while you're working for somebody else, collect all the skills necessary to do something. And like, that takes you stepping outside the box, trying things, you know, maybe trying to figure out a way to start talking to customers. That's one thing that I did when I knew I was going to be an entrepreneur. I was like, all right, like, you've never actually done sales. Like you've never been deep into sales. So I went and got heavily involved in sales and like, I was still doing my day-to-day job, but I reached out to my boss and said, how can I support sales? I know at the higher levels, and I was still the pretty junior employee. I was like, I know at the higher levels, they got to support sales as a part of their job. So let me start that process now. And I figured out so much about sales that I didn't know before, but you can't,
right.
There's so much stuff about this that you can't learn in books. You got to try it and do it. And luckily you have, you know, your own business right now where you understand some of the stuff that goes into it. But when you talk about employees and as you talk about consulting, the challenges with consulting is it's an expensive company to run because you have to have people, where software is a little bit easier to run because and it scales faster because it's less people that you have to have. You're really just selling a software solution, which is where you're able to get a lot of venture capital. So what I would be thinking about is what problem are you trying to solve? And is there a way to bring software to that problem? Because software solutions are what create billion-dollar companies. If you look at the billion-dollar companies out there, and that's kind of where my mindset is at.
When people
were asking me, like somebody asked me after the funding announcement, they're like, so what now since you're technically a millionaire now? And I'm like, man, I don't even think about that because my dreams and vision are in the billions for this company and where we're trying to go. It's not about these... And it's crazy to say this, but these smaller dollar amounts, it's about a bigger vision of what I'm trying to go to and trying to
accomplish. I feel you, Kanye.
You feel me? Like it's just the vision's so much bigger, man. Like, and I think that's the dope part about starting something that you'll see as you go down that journey is once you get rolling, like it's, you see, like there's really no limit on where you can take these things in this field, especially when you start to bring software to it. But I would say, you know, try out some stuff, man, collect some skills until you get to the point where you have enough to go out, and you don't have to, like everybody thinks like to start a software company, they got to be the main person writing the product and doing all the coding. That's what there's co-founders for. That's what there's other people in the industry for. So you don't necessarily have to be the CEO or the co-founder that writes code. There's roles for others out there, but still with entrepreneurship, it's like, it's tough, man. Like this stuff is not, as you know, it's not easy. So like, you got to know a lot about what you're trying to solve. And I just collect skills, continue collecting skills.
Definitely. That's what's up. I know for me, possibly wondering about, cause right now what they're doing, like if you want to just solve a problem, like I know one of the problems, biggest things for like socks is like alert fatigue. So if you notice, all the companies are, oh, cool. Like here's my SOAR solution. Here's my SOAR solution. I think SOAR is only one part. And like you said, and what's the next thing that takes the SOAR, you know, over the edge on really how to really be effective? Cause you still got to do use cases and do this and that. And even still, I don't think it's enough because all they're doing is ingesting more and more logs in every company. And even with SOAR, the analysts can't keep up. So definitely. To get more on ByteCheck, I will ask you, so you gave us like, you know, how long it took you, rough around close to like 2 years. And you said it's a software. And two things, I guess, because I've had this kind of like my last podcast episode about GRC. But in your words, can you explain GRC and compliance and kind of the pretty much the best uses of ByteCheck software?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give a scenario to your listeners where if you think about a software company, imagine this, it's a young early stage software company that things are going very well. And they have this big customer that wants to do business with them, Microsoft or Google or whoever wants to do business with them. But in order for them to close this deal, that could be life changing, you know, 7-figure deal for this company. The big company is like, I need to know that you're secure. I want to make sure that your application is not going to get breached, that you're not going to have a security weakness in the next 6 months. And I need a third party to come in and validate that. And that third party is where ByteCheck comes in and where the whole GRC, governance, risk, and compliance industry sits, is third parties that come in and validate the security practices and processes at companies for them to prove to other people that they're doing the right thing. So at its simplest form, it's an audit where someone comes in and says, yeah, you say you're encrypting your data at rest. We're going to come in and check it. And what ByteCheck does is automate a lot of the manual stuff that I used to do as an auditor before I started this, where I would fly out to people's companies, headquarters, sit in conference rooms for hours at a time, asking engineers a bunch of questions, talking to SOC managers to figure out how they are responding to alerts. How do they track incidents? What's going on there? And that whole process and validating that, hey, like if a vulnerability comes in, what happens next? And I want to go see all the tickets and I see all the communication. So to all the people listening to this that are SOC analysts, like, your comments and your responses that you're doing on those tickets, somebody's looking at those to verify that you all are following the right processes and things like that. But what we built at ByteCheck is a way to automate that. So instead of me asking your engineers for AWS screenshots, we've integrated directly with AWS using our API and their API to automatically pull information in and do the testing automatically. You know, It's 2021. We're about to be in 2022. We should not still be asking people for screenshots and audits. Like, that's crazy to me. We should be able to do that in a more automated fashion. So I built a software solution to automate all of that manual nonsense and bring some more technical value back to these audits. And we specialize in what's called SOC 2 audits, SOC 2 audits. We also help people with ISO 27001 and HIPAA audits as well. And the whole goal is exactly what our slogan says, is to make compliance suck less. Just make the process easier for everyone involved. Take away a traditional process that people don't see any value in, that just check the box exercise, and bring some security value to it by using the software solution to automate it.
Man, that's a lot, but definitely a good pitch. I can see how, you know, you've been successful this far, because I mean, pretty much laid it out, and you laid out stuff kind of the way like I like to. I don't like to get overly technical and complicated when I talk about things.
Yeah.
I like to talk to somebody as if they're like a high C-level person that don't know what I'm talking about, but they understand, you know, the urgency of what I'm bringing to them. So that's definitely cool. So we'll go two parts, because what I've also started leaning towards is people niching down, you know, in their career, or maybe early on or mid-career. Are there, well, granted, I guess maybe not, but we'll say this for the future, will there be opportunities for people, let's say they would say, I want to learn how to be, you know, a developer for Bytecheck software. I want to learn how to be a salesperson for Bytecheck. Will there be a way for people to do that? Like, finds like that be like their career focus, like where they want to like help sell, you know, Bytecheck software to other people? I mean, I guess granted they can apply and do that now, but
yeah they could definitely apply to join the team. But no, what you're asking is a great question, because it's something that we hope to accomplish over the next few years, where Bytecheck becomes this industry tool that people are using at their organizations to facilitate these activities, to go through compliance. And if you think about people that are getting jobs off of ServiceNow, and they're ServiceNow administrators or HubSpot, and people know all these.
And that's what I was kind of looking at it as, something like a ServiceNow, a Jira, or whatever you want to call it, Salesforce, something like that, where I could see that, boom, it's a need for this. This thing is going to blow up. Because I remember when I first did help desk, it was really kind of more so all about Remedy at the time. And then it starts slowly but surely. Everywhere you went, must know how to use ServiceNow, must know how to use ServiceNow, must know how to use ServiceNow. So that's the reason why I kind of brought that up, because I'm pretty sure, like you said, next couple of years, we're going to see somebody. Oh, shout out to Mary. Mary's going to be like, hey, I got a Bytecheck boot camp coming up on how to use Bytecheck so you can get you a job. So that's nice.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's the cool part, is I actually have a plan for Bytecheck, where we're going to have a Bytecheck Academy, and you're going to be able to learn all things there are about compliance, but also how to use Bytecheck. And ideally we sit in the middle of the ecosystem where everybody's using Bytecheck to facilitate these things. And we can create an ecosystem where people can get roles. We got some ways to go to get there though, obviously, and got some building to do, but I'm actively hiring across every role imaginable at the organization. And we're talking, the cool thing about like building a brand and doing what you've done and what I've been able to do over this past year and some change, is it's really easy for me to find people that want to work at Bytecheck, because they see all about it. They know about our culture. I'm public about what I believe in and the type of people I want to work with. So it makes things easier when it's time to hire people. So we have a lot of cool people we're talking to, but I am hiring, man. So like, if there's people out there that are like, Bytecheck sounds like an interesting place to work at, hit me up. My DMs get crazy from time to time, so I might miss it. But I eventually respond, as HD here will tell you, that you know, I'll get back and chat with you and hopefully help somebody break into this industry.
Yeah, he's a man of his word. Because I remember when you posted that internship a couple of months ago, I put it in my Slack space for people that I was looking. And it's just funny. I'm going to touch on two things, and then we'll get into like the last part. I know you're a busy man. how underrated GRC is. I have a friend, no lie, she had put on Twitter the other day. Me and her were talking on the phone last week, and she's like, you know what? If I would have listened to you sooner, I would have got this job in GRC faster. Because I was, you know, I'm trying to mock her a little bit, because I was trying to do all this other stuff and learn this and that, and you told me, you looked at my resume and said, you need to go into compliance. And I think that's a lot of times where entry level people get messed up. They're trying to chase what they see on the timeline, and I can look at your skill set. You know, I'm gonna bring it back to, you know, I always bring stuff back to boxing. I'm like, hey, why I got you trying to fight like Floyd when you know, you're a better fighter if you fight off your front foot, like you fight better like Errol Spence or somebody. Why am I trying to make you go into a Philly shell? You know, let's work on this. You know, you're a southpaw, but I'm trying to make you fight orthodox. So I always focus on what's your best skill set and say, hey, go for that. Yeah. And plus with GRC, it's a lower barrier entry because people kind of sleep on it and don't realize that it's GRC folks out here really getting paid.
Man, I'm trying to tell people there's a bag out here in compliance. And like you said, the barrier to entry from a technical standpoint is not as high as the other fields. And if you add a little bit of knowledge about GRC and you put some compliance experience on top of it, oh man, you are going to be a very highly sought after resource for sure. So hopefully, you know, that internship that I posted, that person that ended up getting that and the feedback from the community was crazy. We had over 50 applicants just from that, people that sent videos in like less than a day. I had to shut it off and tell people to stop because it was too much for us to handle. But the person that got that internship is now a full-time employee at BiteCheck. They had zero experience in this field beforehand. So I know a lot of people talk about, oh, there's no entry-level jobs out there. There's no entry-level roles out there. There's a few of us employers out there that are still truly hiring people with no experience, paying them, and then turning them into full-time roles. And she's crushing it. She's doing amazing things with us. She's a big part of our story of why we're growing and excited to see her continue to grow. But we're going to do another one of those here in February or March where I'm going to post that we're doing an internship, no experience needed, $20 an hour, 40 hours a week, just to get your foot in the door. And if you can flip that into a full-time role, that's dope. I'll give you another example of an internship that we had a guy by the name of Nick McLaren, who was a former BiteCheck employee, started out as a $20 an hour internship, changed that into a full-time role at BiteCheck, ended up leaving to go work at Truist as a senior cloud security engineer, and just recently got promoted to assistant vice president as a cloud security engineer at Truist. And people can look up what he's making there as an AVP at Truist. But he flipped it.
Is that a financial company?
Yeah. It's formerly SunTrust.
I figured it because, I mean, I'm in a financial company now. I'm associate VP and all that kind of stuff. Like, yep. But he he's getting paid.
Yeah, $20 an hour internship to that in a year. He started his BiteCheck internship in last November and been able to do that. So that's the crazy part about this industry is I know there's a lot of people out there that are like trying to get in, busting their butts, just like keep going, because once you get in, it's really up to you. I've seen people that get in and they stay stagnant. That happens. And no way you don't grow at all because you're not hungry enough. But there's people like Nick or Moline, who's at our company now, where they get a $20 an hour internship, and that's the lowest amount they'll ever make again in their lives because they're just constantly growing. And very, very quickly, you can go from $20 an hour internship to life-changing money in this field, which is the dope part. And my goal is, you know, I tell people all the time, like, I'm very confident in my outcome. I know exactly what's going to happen for me and my personal situation for my family. I'm confident that it's going to work out for your boy. My goal now is to build and create other millionaires. I want to create 20 more people that have become millionaires. And that's my dream and something I pride myself on. And I want to do it fast. I don't want to take the next 20 years to do that. I'm trying to do that really quickly. And the goal and my focus there is just giving people that are hungry a shot and putting them in positions to win. And there's a lot of us out there. So people just got to keep going. I meet a lot of people that are trying to break in and they quit so early on. And there's a reason why there's a reason why we get paid so much in this field. Is it because it's in high demand? So like, you got to understand that things that are in high demand are difficult and they're really hard for you to do, but you got to just keep going and push through.
Definitely. Hey guys, look, you watching this right now, you never know. You might see some videos pop up. Hey, this video is sponsored by BiteCheck.
For real.
But, now, that's one of the things I have been wanting to get to, like some brand deals just for the channel, but also bring awareness to different things. I wanted to do some stuff that I'm more aligned with, which is, I'll say it's a little bit, not confusing, but you got to figure out exactly who to talk to and how to do it early on. So even though you said no skills needed, if somebody didn't get the BiteCheck internship, what top five skills would you suggest they know to get into compliance, or we say cloud, because I see you talk about AWS a lot. So what top five skills would you suggest to them that you know, like, are here in the market and are going to keep on being even more important in the future?
Yeah, I think the first thing that you should do if you're trying to get into governance, risk, and you should do two things, really. I don't think there's five that are necessary. Pick a cloud provider and start learning that cloud provider. And that's really, I think, any aspect of cybersecurity. Oftentimes I talk to people and they're trying to chase like the CCSK or the CCSP, whatever the ISC squared version is. And I always tell people, like, just pick a cloud provider and learn that cloud provider, because you're basically doing double the work by learning what ISC squared calls the cloud. And then you got to go learn what AWS calls the cloud. So pick a cloud provider, become known as someone that understands that cloud provider. And the way you become known of doing that is by doing labs, doing projects, publicizing your work, sharing what you're doing so people can believe that you actually have the skills you're talking about having. And then the other aspect is, like, there's a lot of frameworks out there in the governance, risk, and compliance space. There's SOC 2, there's ISO, there's HIPAA, there's PCI, there's HITRUST. And a lot of this information about all these frameworks is public. So whenever I had interviews with people at my previous company, and even now at the entry level, if you just come in with a little bit of knowledge about a framework, that blows my mind. And that's crazy that it does, but that's the people that stand out. When they come in and say, like, oh, I've read about SOC 2 on your ByteCheck website, and then, you know, I know the difference between a SOC 2 type 1 and a type 2. I know the five trust service categories. I know what a SOC 2 is. Now I know that you can pick this stuff up. Now I know that you've actually tried and put some effort for beforehand, before the interview process. And then if you add a little bit of cloud knowledge on top of that, and that's the person that got the role, they came in super prepared, knew a lot about SOC 2, knew a lot about ByteCheck. They also had a cloud cert. So it was like, oh, you're in this, you're trying to break into this. You're doing some things that are showing me that you're trying. So I would tell anybody, if you know the cloud and just can know one of the frameworks, at least at a high level, it's going to be easier for you to break into this industry. And then the other, like, I know it's a dead horse that you beat on, and I'm going to say it again, it's just networking, man. Like, a lot of people think that's like some mythical thing, but truly building your network with people that are in the compliance industry will set you up for success. If you know, people oftentimes think networking means it's all about who you know. It's not about who you know. It's about who knows you. And what do they know that you know? Because if I know you, HD, and I just know that you do your podcast, but I don't know anything of the skills that you have, when an opportunity presents itself for me to give you, sorry for my kids screaming in the background. But when an opportunity presents itself for me to say, like, somebody's like, hey, I need a SOC manager. If I don't know anything about your skills and what you know, I can't recommend you for that role. But if I know you, and I know, I've seen, oh, he's been posting about this, he's been doing this on the cloud, he's been doing this, I saw this project that he did recently, this blog that he wrote, immediately when somebody presents that opportunity, I'm like, oh, I got a guy. Let me send you his LinkedIn. Let me send you exactly what he's about. And that's part of that is what happened to some of the people that have left ByteCheck. I encouraged them and I pushed them. I said, publish blogs, just write a blog about something that you're doing. Soon as they start writing blogs, the messages on their LinkedIn change because people now know, oh, this isn't just a cert. This isn't just a job title. This person actually knows something. So the best thing I can give you, if you're like, AJ, I'm not learning nothing else. I'm not learning no AWS. I'm not learning this compliance stuff. I'm really only going to focus on networking. You'll be successful. Go out and meet people and share what you know and constantly put yourself out there, because it's going to work out.
Definitely, man. Listen, you made my point for what I said earlier about even the intern thing, about if you just do what you're supposed to do, somebody gonna brag on you and all that. So the last thing we'll get into is, you know, for you guys that don't know, this guy is one of the top voices on LinkedIn. Every time he has a great post on there, is a lot of, you know, attention, reactions, comments. So he has all type of people. All right. So look, free game. When I'm telling people on how to move and maneuver on LinkedIn, I tell them, hey, go find people in the industry. And then also put a thought-provoking comment on one of their posts, you, first of all, you never know who sees it. And then now that gives you some visibility, he may or may not comment, or somebody else of that status may comment, and then boom, you know, you go follow them. And then you just keep on putting out interesting content and keep on providing content, and you're going to eventually be a person that people start looking for, you know, what, you know, what you think about things when it comes to certain topics on LinkedIn, especially in the area that you're trying to go into. So that's just one of the ways you can do that. But I wanted him to touch on pretty much how important has LinkedIn been for, I guess, well, granted, we already know his career has skyrocketed, but as far as like Bite Check. And then I want him to also give us a little bit of information or tidbits on when we can expect this podcast coming from him. Yeah. So that's the last two questions really we got.
We could do a whole session on LinkedIn, because LinkedIn is a game changer. And if you're not utilizing your LinkedIn appropriately, like I literally, when I'm, like I said, I'm in a position where I'm hiring people. So I'm telling you from the horse's mouth what I do. I meet with my HR person, people officer. We go through the applicant, and I go to the LinkedIn. I like, there's resumes attached, but I'm going to your LinkedIn. So if your LinkedIn's not up to date, that's a bad sign to me, because there's other people, their LinkedIn is super up to date. They're super active,
right,
doing all these things. And like, that just makes my job easier. I'm looking at hundreds of applicants. So the ones that stand out are the ones that have a really strong LinkedIn. So update your LinkedIn. And what you said about commenting, the best free game you could ever give out. That's the number one way for you to grow your brand on LinkedIn, is find five people in the industry that post frequently and comment something thoughtful. You'll immediately tap in and hijack their network. You can come into my comments and hijack my entire network, because you're going to comment, I'm going to reply to you. Now people are associating me and you together about this specific topic. And there's people mm-hmm. that reached out to me. The reason I responded is because I saw their name before. They were in my comments and I was familiar with them. And some of them have turned into mentees and deeper relationships, business relationships, because we built that relationship in the comments. And I've done it to other people where I've lived in their comments, built a relationship, and now they're business partners or whatever it may be. So leverage LinkedIn. You know, I've had a lot of success on there. I would say a lot of Bite Check's success is because of LinkedIn. I've had significant business deals pop up in my inbox because of the activity on LinkedIn. They're like, oh, I saw LinkedIn post of yours. We constantly have people that are booking us for meetings off the website, prospects, and they're like, oh, we saw AJ on LinkedIn. Or I hop on a call with a customer and they're like, oh, I've been following you on LinkedIn for a while. And it's because I just decided to focus. And this is another example of the obstacle being the way. When I started building Bite Check March 1st, every startup book you read says you got to get out the building, you got to go talk to customers, you got to go meet with people. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out in Miami. I'm going to be in these streets. I'm going to meet with a bunch of people, teach cybersecurity and cloud stuff to folks. But then the pandemic happened and shut all of that down. And I knew I had to do something to get the word out about LinkedIn. And I think I had like 700 or 800 followers on LinkedIn at the time when this started. And now I don't know what I'm at now, but it's a crazy number. And it's wild, because only reason I got active on LinkedIn was because of the pandemic, but it's something I should have done years ago. And if I would have built my brand on LinkedIn 2, 3, 4 years ago, who knows what this looks like now, man? Like, it could be crazy.
Right.
The opportunities that are there, especially in cybersecurity. If you are in cybersecurity and you're not posting on LinkedIn regularly, you are missing out on opportunities, because there's not a lot of people that post actively on LinkedIn in this field. So it's a great space for you to build your brand, connect with CISOs and other leaders in the industry that are really open on LinkedIn to chatting with you. And I can go on and on about LinkedIn. It's been an amazing journey. You know, I got LinkedIn Top Voice 2020 last year. This year I got accepted into the LinkedIn Creator Accelerator program, where they're investing $15,000 in me to post on LinkedIn, which is cool. And then next year, I'm actually going to be a LinkedIn learning instructor as well, teaching a SOC 2 course on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn has been a dope platform and just showing me a lot of love. I, you know, definitely HD, if we want to do we could hop on one of my LinkedIn lives or something, and I can do a whole LinkedIn course for you and your folks, and you can use it as a way to help teach people some things about LinkedIn that I think they can use to grow their stuff. And I'm happy to do that. And then on the podcast, you know, this week, first episode's dropping this week, the To Comply or Not To Comply podcast with Hacker Valley Studio. I'm super excited to be doing it with my guys, Chris and Ron, who are legends in this space, and people that I just have seen grind and grind into a ridiculous amount of success. And I'm excited to jump into the podcast space. One of my plans for Byte Check is to turn Byte Check into a media company. We're going to have podcasts. We're going to have videos. We're going to have blogs. We're going to have infographics. Like, the content that's going to come out of Byte Check over the next year, you're just not going to be able to think about compliance. When you go to sleep and you remember compliance, you're going to think about Byte Check because of all the content we're putting out. And that's one of my goals for this year. So this week, first episode with Flea, the chief security officer at Gusto, is coming out this week. And I got a bunch of really cool CISOs coming up. I got something in the works from a cultural perspective of a guest on my podcast that's going to be really dope. I can't say just yet, but because of my interesting background of being connected to sports and that side of the world, I got some interesting contacts. So I'm going to have a dope guest on the podcast here in the next few months. But yeah, I'll definitely be sharing it. And, you know, hopefully people enjoyed and learned something from it. My goal is to have some really interesting conversations with leaders in the industry, leaders from across all industries, and talk about how they were able to succeed by thinking outside the box. So when I ask the question of to comply or not to comply, it's not just about cybersecurity compliance. It's also about in life and in your career, and how have you reshaped things by going outside the line. So I'm excited about it, man. I'm a new in the podcast host space. I've been on hundreds of podcasts as a guest, but it's weird being on the other side, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. Where can we listen? Where can we listen to the podcast?
Yeah, if people on all of your favorite podcast networks, Spotify, Apple Music, if you go to hackervalley.com, it's not up yet, but when the first episode drops, you'll be able to find all the episodes, the show notes, and all of that good stuff. It's all going to be under the Hacker Valley Studio umbrella. And if people haven't heard of Hacker Valley Studio, they definitely should go check out the podcast there by Chris and Ron. And they got some other ones on there too that are just really dope. And those are some good black dudes to know in the industry that are doing they did some really cool things in the past, and now they're they've been able to turn that podcast into a full-time gig where they get to do that full-time and build and get taken care of very well to do it. So it's a hell of an inspirational story for people that are in the media space to see what could happen in this industry by just sharing stories. And those dudes have been doing it for a while.
Definitely. I'll make sure to have all that stuff in the description for everybody. I think I put it on Twitter, but I said, listen, man, I'm going to be, because I plan to get a co-host. So I was like, I'm going to be like the Joe Budden or the Gillian Awalo of like a tech podcast, because, you know, it's going to get, you know, definitely a little bit more interesting and dicey in here, because especially with some of the topics I see on Twitter. So
yes, sir. Yeah,
definitely. Definitely with that. But let me see, put this on real quick. But yeah, guys, we're pretty much wrapping up towards the end of the podcast. Do you want to tell everybody where they can follow you on your social media handles?
Yes, sir. On Twitter, at AJ Yon. On LinkedIn, you can find me by the same name. And Instagram, you can find me at AJ Yon as well, with an underscore at the end. So hit me up. I sometimes I'm slow to respond to DMs, but I get to them. So don't be afraid to DM me. I'm happy to chat and potentially hop on a call with some folks if I can be of help for them. So HD, I appreciate the opportunity, man. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you, man. You guys know where y'all can reach me at. And I'm letting you guys know, he's one of them ones. There's like a couple of ones, even though he's not that much older than me, you got to look at him like an OG from what he's already did in his career so far, that responds, you know, that's not lying. You know what I'm saying? Now, so follow him. Always good tips, especially on his LinkedIn. If you're looking into getting the compliance, GRC, even if it's not with Bycheck, you know, what they say, eat the meat, spit out the bones. go on his LinkedIn and get that, man. But it's been another episode of the Textual Talk. Let's get textual.